Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons and Dragons, from badass bullywugs to bodacious broadswords, and today we're talking about the Basilisk.
Prepare yourselves.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty fucking solid. I'm so excited about our new end of the episode bit.
Yeah, I'm also very much liking it as well.
It's hype.
But before we get to that, we have to do the episode. And today, our subject is a legendary, real-world, mythological creature that dates back as far as at least ancient Rome, the Basilisk.
Nice.
This reptilian monstrosity is infamous for one thing, and one thing alone, its ability to turn victims to stone with its gaze. Mm. This remains true in the world of Dungeons & Dragons. Whether out in the mountain wilds or deep underground, the discovery of stone statues of terrified humanoids crafted in masterful detail is a sign to keep one's eyes closed and ears open, because nearby, a basilisk could be hunting.
Ugh.
And surviving a fight with a basilisk requires either careful preparation or considerable good fortune. Neither good nor evil, the basilisk is essentially just a big animal with a cool magic power. It's also the perfect 3 challenge rating, which you know I love.
Yeah, the signature CR3 on the Dungeon Cast, which like CR4 also kind of fits in there sometimes.
Oh, it's almost there, but it's not quite perfect.
Yeah, because of the differentiation of CR between monster and monster.
It's different.
But what about Harry Potter when it's a big snake and it has the fang or whatever they use to kill Voldemort? Spoilers for Harry Potter. A fucking movie that's a bajillion years old.
I was gonna ask you what your touchstone for the basilisk was.
I know that's absolutely inherently wrong. That's what it sounds like.
It depends. It's actually more right than you think it would be. So,
really, like, because it's not like visually not the same. It's
a giant snake.
Yeah, like I just saw a picture of it. Doesn't look like that at all.
So the D&D basilisk looks a lot different from every other kind of basilisk.
Oh, so a regular real world times, well, like a snake is more accurate.
Let's get into it.
I would like
to. So in real world mythologies, the basilisk is noted to be a legendary reptile, reputedly a king of serpents, who can cause death with a single glance. The stories of the basilisk are far and many, and few seem to agree on anything. Some say the basilisk is called the king of serpents because it is reputed to have on its head a crown-shaped crest. Others say that it is the king of serpents because when it hisses, all serpents flee. Its physical description also varies widely, as well as its name. It has been depicted as a giant snake with wings, a small snake with wings, a half chicken, half dragon, a half snake, half chicken, and everything in between.
Well, we're going way off the rails here.
Okay. Many stories of the basilisk show that it is not completely distinguished from another legendary creature, the cockatrice. The cockatrice is a chicken dragon monster that will get its own episode one day.
I've seen that. Okay, yeah.
So it's all over the place.
Most of the time it's a snake, it sounds like, likely. Reptilian, at least, in nature.
Yeah, back in the ancient times it was more snake-like, but then it became more cockatrice-like.
How? Where did we get there? How did we get there?
Over the course of many cultures and millennia.
It was a weird game of telephone, mythological telephone.
Yeah, that's what history is.
But what if it was a bird?
Okay. The in real life mythological basilisk is said to be hatched by a cockerel from the egg of a serpent or toad, the reverse of the cockatrice, which was hatched from a cockerel's egg incubated by a serpent or toad.
Okay.
Whatever. As the legends of the king serpent developed over the ages, more magical powers were attributed to it, including a venomous strike and the ability to breathe fire.
Cool. Okay.
According to the Naturalis Historia of Pliny the Elder, a Roman naturalist philosopher and author, the basilisk is from Cyrene, Libya, and is a small snake, being not more than 12 fingers in length, that is so venomous it leaves a wide trail of deadly venom in its wake, and its gaze is likewise lethal. He goes on to detail that the basilisk's weakness is the odor of the weasel, which, according to Pliny, was thrown into the basilisk hall, recognizable because some of the surrounding shrubs and grass had been scorched by its presence. So that's how they would get rid of their basilisk. They would throw a weasel in a hole.
This is wild. And a lot of different things about this are wild. That Pliny the Elder came up on the podcast is wild.
Well, he's actually come up on the podcast 4 or 5 times before this.
Has he?
Yeah, you just didn't notice.
Oh, wow. It's okay. Yeah, now I read the notes along with Will. So yeah, Pliny the Elder being here is like wild to me. And probably if I went and listened back to those episodes, it would be wild.
Yeah.
And it's a Pliny the Elder story, which is wild. They're all fucking wild.
Yes.
Okay.
He just made a lot of stuff up a lot of the time.
Fuck yeah.
That's what he did.
Fake it till you make it, dog.
Fake it till you make it. He made it.
He definitely made it. not correctly, but he did.
He did. It is possible that the legend of the basilisk and its association with the weasel in Europe was inspired by accounts of certain species of Asiatic snakes, such as the king cobra and their natural predator, the mongoose.
Okay.
So much like some of the other creatures we've talked about on this show, the basilisk was a cryptozoological creature that was not considered cryptozoological. Even though it was, no one had ever actually seen one, it was considered to be a real thing that actually lived. It was in bestiaries like this Naturalis Historia and stuff like that. I can't remember the last creature. Oh, the rock. That was the other one that people thought was a real creature.
It's definitely.
There's a lot of these creatures that even though they're legendary and mythical and magical now, they were considered actual creatures that lived even though they didn't.
Sure, yeah.
So, back to D&D. The basilisk is an enormous 8-legged lizard-like reptile with a wide gaping maw filled with sharp jagged teeth. They possess a row of bony spines that line their back and have a curved horn atop their noses at times. So kind of like a rhino.
Yeah, like a rhino horn.
Their bodies have a bulky iguana look to them. Basilisks come in a variety of colors from dark gray to dark orange, and although they also commonly have a dull brown body with a yellowish underbelly.
Yeah, they look like a tree trunk on its side with legs and spines.
Yeah. Basilisk's eyes are, however, their most notable feature, glowing a pale green light. Adult basilisks can grow to be about 6 feet long, not counting the tail, which can reach another 5 or 7 feet and can typically weigh over 300 pounds.
That's massive.
For some reason, they're categorized as medium. I don't understand how or why.
Yeah, we hotly debated it.
We hotly debated it before the beginning of the show. I couldn't believe it. Anyways, although it has 8 legs, due to its sluggish metabolism, the basilisk moves at an extremely slow speed. Still, basilisks are quite effective hunting creatures because they have no need to chase their prey. For meeting a basilisk, supernatural gaze could be enough to affect a rapid transformation, transforming a victim into porous stone. Basilisks with their strong jaws are capable of stone consumption, saunter slowly up to their victim and begin to devour them.
Oh, man.
The stone then returns to organic form by some alchemical magic within the basilisk's gullet. And so these creatures tend to spend most of their time merely lying in wait for prey, which includes small mammals, birds, reptiles, and similar creatures. When not hunting, basilisks are usually sleeping off their latest meal in their lairs.
I only like to eat rocks, but I also can only digest the flesh of the innocent.
Yeah, so they get
the flesh of whatever.
They have a whole system that does all of it for them.
That's wild, man. Like, why not just digest rocks? Like, so what's the function of this? Is there a function of this? Can I cut the thing open? Okay, so I turn something into stone.
Uh-huh.
I eat it bite by bite. Uh-huh, it becomes pieces in my stomach and turns back into flesh. No, could I theoretically...
Yeah. In the gullet, which I think is like in the throat, this section,
but it goes into the gut as flesh. Yeah. So can I cut this thing's gut open and fish out the pieces of my friend and bring him back to life?
Maybe. I'm not sure how that all works.
Yeah, because then you've greater restorated in the gullet.
Well, you can't greater restore it because it's not.
Well, I mean, they turn it into flesh or whatever, right? It's like back to its normal.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, sure.
So I don't have to waste time greater restorating it from stone.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you would figure that out because, like, theoretically, like, Bob gets turned to stone. He eats Bob's arm, but then you get there, kill Basilisk, retrieve the arm, but Bob's still stone. So I guess you turn him into not stone, but then he's bleeding out of his stump.
Not while he's stoned. So you gotta greater restorator him and get a team on surgeons on, get a hot knife or something.
Yeah, there we go. Like, but if you don't have all that hand, that arm's gonna die.
Right, exactly.
And then Bob just has no arm.
Because what are you gonna do? Get the wizard to fucking like ray of frost your bag of holding to keep the fucking arm there, or whatever. Like,
I mean, okay, you
so
could.
You
maybe.
Gotta get it on ice, and then so here's the thing: is like you really do need to put the iron on Bob when he wakes up. from
Green the Green. Iron on Bob.
Yeah, you get a hot iron and
just, oh yeah.
So you wake
yeah.
up from you're like, wait, I thought we were fighting the basilisk.
Ah, oh, we were.
And then yeah. like you look down and there's a you're being cauterized.
Exactly.
Okay.
Let's take a short rest.
Sucks for Bob.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Hey everybody, be sure to check out
Super Quest Saga, a future fantasy 5th edition D&D actual play podcast homebrewed and dungeon mastered by yours truly, me, and set in space.
And I play in it, along with your special guest Jake and friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, or anywhere else you can get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga!
We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're back again to talk about how you could be turned into stone, mm-hmm. eaten, and then fished out of this fucking thing's stomach, maybe.
Maybe. It's possible. So precisely how the creature's gaze works is a mystery, but most scholars subscribe to the theory that the creature's eyes emit a radiation that, if absorbed by the eyes of other creatures, or even itself, the gaze reflected back on itself. Whoa. Pause. We got to start over. This looks like it got put out of order.
Oh, okay.
That didn't read correctly.
We'll just keep going.
Hold on.
No, I think it's right. It's just the way you read it, I think, maybe. Most scholars subscribe to a theory that the creature's eyes...
Oh, I see how it's supposed to be read. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. It just... That comma and
I see how that happened, yeah.
Let's start over.
We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're back to talk about how if you get turned to stone and eaten, you could potentially be fished out of the opponent.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Precisely how the creature's gaze works is a mystery, but most scholars subscribe to the theory that the creature's eyes emit a radiation that...
Okay, stop. Did you do something to your microphone?
I did not.
I'm getting some spikes off of
you. I see that.
Yeah.
I mean, I clapped a couple times. I think
it's being hit. Can you make sure that the connection at the bottom is there?
The connection at the bottom is connected.
Okay, cool. And then let's get...
Wonder when I hit it.
Plenty of slack. I mean, it was doing it earlier when you were making the adjustment at the beginning to talk to the camera.
Yeah.
I heard it, but it's that connection. So just try not to touch it. Okay. You're good now.
All right.
I'll do it one more time, and I'm not going to do that. That joke landed so much worse the second time. I'm not going to do it a third time. All right. We've returned. We're back at it again. Fuck yeah. Let's get fucking vaporized by these basilisks and eaten.
Well, you don't get vaporized. You
get stonerized. Petrified. Get stoned.
Stonerized. It's petrified.
It's time to get stoned with the basilisk.
All right. Well, precisely how these creatures' gazes work is a mystery. But most scholars subscribe to the theory that the creature's eyes emit a radiation that, if absorbed by the eyes of other creatures or even itself, if its gaze is reflected back upon it,
vis-a-vis a mirror,
causes an inexplicable chemical reaction in the bloodstream, altering living flesh to stone. Which, honestly, that's meaningless.
Can you?
We don't know how it works, but maybe it's a series of events that works.
If you make an illusion that is a mirror, right? Mm-hmm. Like I made the illusion of a mirror. Would it cause would there be a reflection in it? Or would you have to manipulate the illusion to reflect whatever is looking at it?
It would not be an actual reflection.
Okay.
It would be a false reflection, so it would not work.
Okay. So the basically this eye beam would go through your illusion.
Yes.
And if you were looking at the thing, you would still turn to stone.
No, that's a good question because like you're not meeting the creature's eyes if there's something in between you that is obscuring your view, technically. Even if the thing isn't actually there. The
illusion.
So if it is this whole radiation thing, a theory that's true, then yes, it would still work. You would get petrified.
Right. It would go through whatever object because the type of frequency
Or
whatever. Okay. Yeah. So but you're saying that if I put up an illusion of a mirror or anything, that it would just hit the illusion and kind of dissipate there.
Yeah.
Like the magic. It's just magic.
Because there's no actual thing for it to reflect off
of. You have to make eye contact or it doesn't count.
Yes.
That's what they say about lots of stuff. I won't get into what specifically.
Clothing, items, and the like carried or worn by victims are not affected despite tales to the contrary. So
you turn to stone, but your clothes don't.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense and also makes it very obvious when a statue isn't just a statue.
Oh, yeah, you know what totally. I mean? So if you're, this thing's going to eat the evidence that it turned anybody into stone. So basically you would find like scraps of clothes or weapons on the ground.
Or even like a stone finger that it dropped out of its mouth or like a head that it didn't decide to consume or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's that as well.
Oh, man.
Basilisks tend to rely on their gaze attack, biting only when opponents come within reach. Due to its slow metabolism, it does not expend energy unnecessarily, and intruders who flee a basilisk rather than fight can expect at best only a half-hearted pursuit. They just don't got it in them.
Yeah. I'm getting more and more hints that you're supposed to cut these things open to get your boys out.
Also, fortunately for those who encounter it, the basilisk is not particularly cunning either, and it will likely not comprehend the properties of a mirror or other reflective device if such is maneuvered into position before it.
Wow.
And may readily petrify itself if such precautions are successfully applied.
See, I was thinking, like, this thing might naturally be adverse to, like, drinking with its eyes open in case it sees its own reflection in a lake or a river.
I agree with what you're saying. Like, and there's also there's something I'm going to say later that kind of, and I feel like it contradicts what I just said.
Yeah, like this thing's not going to just walk around. This thing doesn't live this long or as long as I'm assuming
So later on in the notes, not too far now, I'm going to talk about how basilisks naturally avert their eyes from other basilisks. Which, if it saw a reflection of itself and it doesn't recognize it as a reflection, it's going to recognize that that's another basilisk and it's going to avert its eyes.
Yeah.
So that kind of, it's contradicting. But welcome to what I do, which is parse through all the contradicting bullshit and try and put as little contradicting stuff in here as I can.
I definitely think there's room in here to surprise it with a mirror. Like, it might not know what a mirror is.
Do you know that you need that? In such a way where it cannot comprehend the properties of a mirror. I mean, it could comprehend the properties of reflective water, I would imagine.
Yeah, like if it had time to comprehend the properties of a mirror
But that's not because it can't comprehend what a mirror is.
It's because it got turned to fucking stone when it looked at it.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you.
Okay, anyways. Yeah, I'm with you.
So, like other reptilian creatures, basilisks are cold-blooded. They derive much of their energy from the heat of the sun and spend much time sunning themselves on rocks or heights together to see. I don't know why, but I really have fallen in love with this creature. It's this big, fat, lazy lizard that just lives out in the woods.
Yeah, it's leaving you on red.
It's not
going to your birthday party or even acknowledging your birthday.
It's this big potato out here in the woods.
This big, cold-blooded potato.
Yeah, there we go. They will also often creep up to campfires at night for the same reason, because they feel the heat.
Ooh.
Which I also find adorable. But unlike most reptiles, basilisks can tolerate a fairly wide range of temperature and can also store heat efficiently in their coiled digestive organs. Thus, they remain active on warm or mild nights, even in early spring or late autumn. Basilisks who live deep underground tend to inhabit areas with access to volcanic heat, and if these subterranean creatures are kept from this heat source for any longer than a day, they will grow sluggish and ultimately perish within another 3 days.
Okay.
So, yeah, that is one way you could deprive them of heat.
All right.
I would imagine, I don't know, we haven't looked at the stat block, but that almost makes me think that cold damage would be double effective, but...
Well, yeah. Like, imagine if you hit, like, your average everyday lizard with, like, a bag of ice.
Exactly.
That probably is not good for the lizard.
No, definitely probably not.
Take some bludge damage first.
Yeah, bludge and then cold a lot damage of cold.
Pretty soon after.
It's so horrifying.
Put a bag of ice between your lizard and the sun and see what happens.
Like their smaller kin among the lizard population, basilisks can regrow lost limbs and tails within 1 to 4 months, provided they have an above-average supply of food during this time.
See, this is cool that you can, like, bait them out of their natural habitat to follow heat and food.
Yeah.
And, like, let me just drop this basilisk off in your town where I, oh, where yeah, I cast create bonfire. Could.
That's horrible.
Yes,
that's
it is terrible. Horrible.
Basilisks are found in nearly every climate and often in underground areas as well. They tend to lair in shallow burrows, caves, or other sheltered areas. The entrance to a basilisk lair is sometimes distinguished by lifelike stone statues or carvings, which are actually creatures that ran afoul of the creature's gaze. Travelers within a basilisk hunting territory sometimes find objects that look like pieces of remarkably lifelike stone carvings of wildlife with missing parts that appear to have been bitten off. Mm. Seasoned explorers regard such relics as warnings, knowing that the basilisk that created them is likely to be nearby.
So spoilers for Name of the Wind.
Okay.
Starting now.
Okay.
These remind me of the dragons from Name of the Wind.
Oh, the Dracus?
The Dracus.
Yeah, but without the stone power.
Without the stone power, but they're big, like, lazy, food-driven.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, animals. Absolutely. And it reminds me very much of that as well.
Yeah, these are cool. Let me change what I said earlier about baiting them out to a town to baiting them out to a hobgoblin encampment where you can just let them cause some ruckus before you get in there.
That's
and
clean so
up.
Much better.
Yeah, it is so much better, isn't it?
Anyways, okay. A basilisk born and raised in captivity can be domesticated and trained. Such a trained basilisk knows how to avoid meeting the eyes of those its master wishes to protect from its gaze, but it makes a daunting guardian beast. Mm-hmm. Because of this use, basilisk eggs are highly prized. Some alchemists are said to know how to process a basilisk gullet and the fluids contained within. Properly handled, the gullet produces an oil that will return petrified creatures to flesh and life. Unfortunately for such a victim, any parts lost in stone form remain absent if the creature revives. Revivification using the oil is impossible if a vital part of the petrified creature, such as its head, is detached.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
This is a wild concept. So yes. Yeah, you can domesticate them, yep, essentially.
You super can.
Sick.
Basilisks instinctively avoid looking directly at other basilisks, and they never deliberately use their stoning gaze on one another. They can recognize fellow basilisks by smell, and although their sense of smell is not noticeably keen with respect to hunting down other creatures, it is sufficiently acute to distinguish between individual basilisks, so their mate and their young are readily discerned from strangers.
Well, that's good that they know the difference between their
mate and their young. Yeah, so they're not accidentally turning everyone they know and love into stone.
Okay, good.
Basilisks mate for life, and by instinct breed every 4 summers, usually in water, which helps support their slow, heavy bodies.
It's oddly specific, but okay. Some hippopotamus stuff.
Welcome to Dragon Magazine.
This is crazy, like that we're getting into stuff like this. Like, there wasn't a lot of stuff like this,
dude. I've gone over the mating rituals of so many creatures on this show.
These stand out.
The one that stood out was the flail snail. That one stood out.
That one stands
out.
This
one is tame.
Maybe I'm just like heightened. My senses are heightened to this sort of thing
because you're reading along now.
I'm reading what's happening. Yeah. But yikes.
One or 2 days after mating, the female lays a cluster of greenish-white eggs from 1 to 8, each about the size of a human fist. Basilisk eggs have soft, warm, stretchy surfaces, and they withstand crowding or even gentle handling and tumbling without harm. They cannot break the way avian eggs will shatter in similar circumstances.
Fish eggs.
Yeah. I think it's more like crocodilian eggs.
Oh, yeah. Those are kind of more
Yeah, they're more leathery. Or, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A basilisk parent often picks up an egg in its mouth to carry it, drops it in a new location or to defend itself, or rolls eggs about with its snout, all without doing the eggs any damage. Mm-hmm. After laying its eggs, a basilisk mother covers them in cool sand or half buries them in cool, wet mud. The eggs are almost always fertile, and if they survive the nesting period of 4 to 6 weeks, they will hatch into miniature basilisks 4 to 9 inches long who have full gaze powers at birth.
Have you ever seen the baby basilisk run? They run into the ocean to be...
They have
to turn off.
The birds are picking them off.
No, they're not. They're getting turned to fucking stone.
That's amazing.
I mean, some of them are getting picked off, but a lot of them are getting fucking turned to stone.
Yeah, I love that. That's amazing. During the nesting period, the parents do not eat, all the while growing more and more irritable and fanatical in the defense of their nest and its surroundings.
Man, are we about to get hit up with articles? Oh, thank you, everybody who educated us so much about snails, speaking about the flail snails.
I mean, I figured it was lifted straight from the way snails made it. I just didn't say so because
that's
cool.
I don't look into that stuff. So thanks, guys, for educating everybody in the Discord. That was fucking wild, but yeah, awesome. And yeah, very good stuff. So I'm wondering if we're going to get the same sort of treatment about like turtles and crocodiles, right?
Well, probably. Okay. Almost definitely.
All right.
Hatchlings grow quite rapidly, reaching man size and length from nose to base of tail in 4 to 6 months after they are born. During this growth period, the parents hunt intensively with them and for them. Basilisk young often accompany their parents for up to 3 seasons until they are ready to mate, whereupon they leave their parents and each other to seek out their own mates. I just like how, like, I'm so used to, like, vicious monsters that don't treat their kids very well.
Yeah.
Like, no, this is like a normal animal. Like, yeah. This is a normal one that happens to turn things to stone. Not even my choice. I think it just happens.
Yeah, well, that's how they have to eat, right? Yeah. Like, that's how they eat stuff is they turn it to stone and then take their time with their snacky snack.
Exactly.
Okay.
Though 5e hasn't explored other types of basilisks, previous editions have more than a few variants. There is the greater basilisk, which is simply a larger cousin of the more common reptilian horror, the ordinary basilisk. This is the same, just bigger with higher damage, saves, AC, etc.
That's basically the conversation they had in the storyboarding room for Dungeons & Dragons. Like, it's a basilisk, but bigger.
Yeah, exactly.
Just bigger. Yeah? We like that here.
Indeed.
Okay.
There is the creature known as the Dracolisk. Sages say that the Dracolisk is the offspring of a black dragon and a basilisk of the largest size. The result is a deep brown dragon-like monster that moves with relative quickness on 6 legs. It can fly, but only for short periods, a turn or two at most. This horror can attack with its taloned forelegs and deliver vicious bites. In addition, it can spit a stream of acid.
There's the storyboard I was referencing earlier. The next, like, red thread that goes to the next image is like, okay, it's also big, but also a dragon. We like that here, right?
Indeed.
Okay.
Finally, there is the Abyssal Basilisk. Adventurers are likely to encounter these fiends of the underworld, either in their native environment, barren wastes of the abyss, or summoned to the employ of some dark sorcerer. Servants of the demon lords make good use of the Abyssal Basilisk as guards and escorts. This bigger, badder version of the Basilisk has a death metal makeover, resistances to elemental damages, and boosted damage versus good creatures. As like the opposite of a smite.
Just rub some Abyssal Madness in it.
Yeah. It's a demon Basilisk. That's what it is.
Yeah, I know. The next thread from the dragon one to this one is... Yeah,
it's bigger, but it's
in between the basilisk pictures, there's the photo of the thing it's influenced by. So there's the black dragon in between, and this one is Demogorgon in between.
Shout out
to Demogorgon.
Exactly.
Even though he doesn't have anything to fucking do with basilisks,
but he
does have things to do. Well, with
demons. Might own a few.
Maybe, yeah.
That's all I got about basilisks. You got any questions before you read the stat block to me?
No, I got stuff about basilisks. Right, this episode ain't over yet, baby. I got a stat block and. Like we said earlier, it is a medium monstrosity unaligned, which how?
This thing seems so big. It should definitely be large, but what do I know?
Like 300-pound things are medium, sure, but like the length of it is
And the bulkiness of it too. You've seen the picture of it?
Yeah, it's literally like a fucking, like a big tree stump.
Yeah.
With arms and legs.
Like,
and
it's at least as big as a horse, if not bigger, right? And horses count as large.
It has to be way, way bigger than a horse. This thing has to be.
And horses count as large. So why the fuck is that thing medium?
That's a good question. Let us know why this thing is medium. There might be a reason. There might not be a reason. Let us know if there's not.
There's not a reason.
There's no reason. It's just a fucking error. Armor class is 15 natty.
Nice.
52 HP. And it's movement speed of 20 feet. The big lazy lizards. Dangerous looking. They look like an evil monster.
They do. They look super vicious.
Yeah. It's like a purple worm isn't evil. It's neutral, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's neutral. Unaligned.
Yeah, it just kind of exists and is ferocious. Strength 16, dex 8, con 15, intelligence 2. That's a negative 4.
Very dumb.
Yeah,
very dumb.
So dumb.
Surprising you can tame them at all.
8 wisdom and 7 charisma. Yeah, they're like responsive to their base instinct stuff, like heat and food.
Right.
And so I guess you can train them based off of that. They know who their lover and child are. They can distinguish between the two, which is so good.
Very
dark
handy.
Vision is so handy. I'm glad I can do that too. So senses are dark vision 60 feet, passive perception of 9. Nothing special there. No languages. The challenge rating is the magic 3, and the proficiency bonus is +2. Let's get into the petrifying gaze. If a creature starts its turn within 30 feet of the basilisk, and 2 of them can see each other, the basilisk can force the creature to make a DC 12 con saving throw if the basilisk isn't incapacitated. On a failed save, the creature magically begins to turn to stone and is restrained by the stone.
Mm-hmm.
It must repeat the saving throw at the end of its next turn. On a success, the effect ends. On a failure, the creature is petrified until freed by the Greater Restoration spell or other magic. A creature that is surprised can avert its eyes to avoid the saving throw at the start of its turn. If it does so, it can't see the basilisk until the start of its next turn, when it can avert its eyes again.
Mm-hmm.
If it looks at the basilisk in the meantime, it must immediately make the save. If the basilisk sees its reflection within 30 feet of it in bright light, it mistakes itself for a rival and targets itself with the gaze. It can also do a bite, which is the melee weapon attack with +5 to hit, a reach of 5 feet for one target. The hit is going to do 10 or 2d6 +3 piercing damage +7 or 2d6 poison damage.
Mm-hmm,
it's a beefy bite. It's good.
So this thing's a pain in the ass to fight just because you can't look at it, so you're constantly at disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's constantly, not at advantage, but like it doesn't have the same...
It's putting you at disadvantage.
Yeah, constantly. And then if you decide to forego it, you might turn to fucking stone.
Right, and if your main ability is genjutsu, you can't do shit about that because you're going to turn to stone. You can't maintain the genjutsu if you're turning to stone.
Also, this thing, what it's phrasing about it mistaking itself for another rival and it uses his gaze, like... Wouldn't that be counterintuitive? They just turn each other to stone if it was a rival and it tried to stone gaze its rival?
Yeah, like...
That doesn't make any sense.
Are like, they just betting on like...
Like is my like gaze is faster than your gaze?
Or like you, my saving throw is going to be dope and yours is not sort of thing?
I guess so. Like, it's got to be that.
Saving throw also.
It's got to be that.
Like when rams, you know, butt heads, they're just kind of waiting for
Except
the other
this one is like, it's, you know, this one will kill.
You never see the end of those fights on YouTube.
That's true. You never really do.
Do they die or pass out? Like, what's the end? No, does one back down?
They usually back down, yeah.
I was like, fuck, I'm concussed. I got to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God, my neck.
Yeah, fuck, my fucking neck. All right, you win, bro.
So, anything else about Basilisk you got on there?
It is about inherently about Basilisk, obviously, but like players with Basilisk, there's lines in here that suggest like, so... A creature that isn't surprised can avert its eyes to... There's, like, rules in here to detail what to do with your... What your players are doing with your eyes.
So,
like, when you throw this thing in, like... So, basically, all of a sudden, your dungeon master is asking you where you're looking.
Yeah, you know? Where are you looking?
What are
you
doing? So, what are your eyes doing right now, buddy? Like, okay, why? Like, so how do we smooth that out? Because that's bad. I don't think that's very good for dungeon mastering.
Okay. You're talking about the part before the fight starts, right?
Yeah. Like, you need to give your players an opportunity to... So you can obviously set this up in a lot of different ways, but, like, do you want to force your players to make this save and turn people to stone right off the bat, or do you want to give them an opportunity to avert their gaze?
I mean, it depends. So, like, it's like, okay, they hear something rustle behind, you know, in the tree line over the way. Do they go look? Okay. If they go look, do they... How do they roll in their perception check? If they roll high, okay, they're going to locate this creature. I mean, I'm going to describe the creature and yada, yada, yada. And if their reaction isn't like, oh, shit, a basilisk, look away, then, yeah, they're going to have to make the save.
Yeah, there's a lot of underlying things. Do they know what a basilisk is and what it does?
Yeah,
you exactly. know, like, are in that moment, perception, sight,
like, realization. I'm willing to assume they're looking at it unless they tell me they're not. Because why wouldn't they be?
Right. And then are you going to stack the nature check right there? Like, are you going to say, okay, roll a nature check to see if you know what this thing is?
It depends. If they're a ranger or a druid, almost definitely.
Yeah, the ability to discern that in the first place, right, is a prerequisite.
If it's a rogue or a sorcerer or someone who, like, would just not know, I'm not going to give them the opportunity to roll nature.
Yeah. Okay.
Unless they ask for it. If they ask for it, then it means that their character's thinking about it and they can go ahead and do it.
So honesty is the best. Obviously, honesty this is the is way we the should answer. Be playing the game yeah. is like not trying to just like, oh, well, I look away because I know what this is.
Yeah.
Stay in character and let it play out and trust each other mm-hmm. to tell exactly. a good story.
Right.
But also, like, there are rules written here for these players that are going to be like, oh, no, I was blinking and then just never opened my eyes.
Well, also, there just needs to be, like, in combat, yeah, you have to detail, well, how does this work? Like, if I'm trying to fight this thing and I can't look at it, like, how does this mechanically work? And those are the rules that you have to follow to make it work.
Yeah. So what, you're going to be listening?
Yeah. So you have disadvantage because you can't see it, but you can listen and you can, like, look and see where its feet are and stuff like that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
You can cast the darkness spell.
Sure.
And then that will nullify. You can't see it.
Yeah,
you can't make eye contact with stuff you can't see.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And everyone's at disadvantage.
Everyone is at disadvantage, which means everyone. We can just roll flat.
Sure.
If right. we want. It's up to you how you want to do that. Yeah. We've had that debate before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought that that was a good thing to address here.
Yeah, sure.
Was like how to manage players when you're using this monster mm-hmm. and this titular moment happens where, mm-hmm. you know, it's our first basilisk ever. Because there's player, oh, my player is 40 years old. My character's 40 years old and has been adventuring his whole life. Like, he knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what the basilisk is.
Except for he probably doesn't because he's only level 2.
Exactly, yeah, right? Yeah, like, so. There's, but there's characters like that
yeah,
where, like, I've been adventuring all my life with yeah. level 5 campaign sure. or whatever. You know, yeah. like, just be honest about it. The combat is set up for you to have this be a risk. So
right, exactly.
Just trust each other and, like... Obviously, once your character knows the stakes, you're not going to look around.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's it. All I have.
All right. Then let's get ready for a long rest.
Let's do it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the long rest where we are building our beholder. This isn't a beholder episode, so we're going to add an eye beam to the beholder that we will be building over the next several episodes.
And physical characteristic, too.
And physical characteristic. So let's start with the beam. This creature, the basilisk, only has one power.
Yeah, the petrifying beam.
Oh, it can bite, but like it yeah, and it has dark vision, which isn't an ability really.
No. Now the regular beholder does already have a petrifying beam, but that's okay. This one can have
ours
one too.
Will have one too. Yeah. But it'll be yeah. it'll be this
but this one is a weird radiation that if it bounces back can turn itself into stone.
Yes. It don't let this eye stalk turn in to look at its other eye stalks.
New power. It's not eye beam related though.
Okay.
What if our beholder here has the basilisk gullet that if it eats something stone, it can turn it into not stone?
Okay, so we have an eye beam that turns it to stone, but the physical characteristic can be the gullet.
There we go.
Let's
see
what the gullet on this bad beast looks like.
Yeah, so it's got like the lizard throat thing going on.
Yeah, I actually I got ready for the next episode, so I took it off, but let me pull up basilisk again. Yeah. Sorry for everybody. You can wait just a second. And what is that gullet? Like a gullet of a turkey is specific looking, right?
So I'm thinking, yeah.
Oh, yeah. This one's got little spikes underneath its
yeah,
chin. So this beholder like, underneath the lip line
mm-hmm,
has
mm-hmm.
these little spikies.
Yeah. And it can eat the things that petrify.
This thing can eat porous stone.
Exactly.
Our beholder can eat porous stone and yes. turn you to stone, which it to can eat. Then eat.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's its physical characteristic. So
it's got a roar beam with a golden mane.
Roar beam, golden mane.
A petrifying eye with a gullet that can eat stone.
With a gullet. We thought about putting the frill with the mane, and we also thought about
the
tail.
But the gullet, I think the gullet works.
And a beholder with a tail would be funny, but I like the gullet the best.
I'm sure there'll be other tailed creatures as we keep going.
The gullet wins. There's an opportunity in the future for a tail. This is a one-in-one thing. We don't, you know. These are the rules.
All right, so that's 2 down, 8 to go before this beholder is whole.
A beholder. B-E-W.
Exactly.
H-O. Okay.
Is there anything you want to tell the audience about before we call it here?
Just check out Patreon if you want to support us. It's like one of the best things you can do. That isn't just telling somebody about the show. Tell people about the Dungeon Cast. I think we're going to start getting back on the contest train probably.
Soon.
That's a conversation we should have today.
Yeah.
So soon... February? Oh, we should do some Valentine's Day shit.
Yeah, we'll figure some out.
Watch out for some Valentine's Day shit. Some dungeon love. Show the Dungeon Cast love. It'll show you love back with like a book or whatever we're going to give away. More on that in probably 2 episodes. Other than that, you know, patreon.com/dungeoncast, Instagram, Twitter. Our email is, do you guys want to sponsor episodes? You can. Are there any advertisers out there listening to the back end of the show? You can do so at thedungeoncast@gmail.com, or you can just reach out to us there for whatever. And that's it. It's all the mainstays. Check the notes. There's lots of stuff in the notes. You will love it all. I'm positive of it. Get your episodes early on Patreon, Dungeon Chats, that sort of thing.
There's a store down there.
You got a Super Quest Saga. Jesus, let's end the episode.
We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.